with the Friday report on what it means to become an MP and acquire those two important letters.
It would be very easy for those two little letters to go to your head, in fact. And what you've got to remember when you get all sorts of invitations to go and meet all sorts of great and important people, that they're not really in the least bit interested in you, just as Summerson. They're interested in you as Summerson MP.
I think that I was a national figure, perhaps when I was leader of Haringey Council, and to some extent an international figure. Certainly, I was known in the Caribbean and in parts of America. But since I've become a member of Parliament, I think that has broadened a bit, and now, you know, people all over the globe seem to know about me one way or the other.
It's a scene with which we're all familiar, whether from postcards, calendars, or even perhaps sauce bottles. But what must it be like to arrive here for the first time as a newly elected MP, as a new boy or girl in a class of 650, many of whom will have been here not just for years, but even decades? Well, we aim to find out through the eyes of two new MPs, both of whom entered Parliament at the last election and who are about to start their second year. Both are members for London constituencies, North East London to be exact. Bernie Grant, one of only four black MPs in the House, is the Labour member for the large constituency of Tottenham. While right next door, Conservative Hugo Summerson represents Walthamstow. Bernie Grant, now 44, came to Britain from Guyana when he was 19. After Heriot Watt University and various jobs, he became an active trade unionist and joined the Labour Party. By 1985, he was leader of Haringey Council. In Parliament, Grant has championed the rights of ethnic minorities. His election majority was just over 4,000. At 38, Hugo Summerson is 6 years younger. Educated at Harrow and the Royal Agricultural College, he's a chartered surveyor by profession. In the House, this has given him a special interest in housing and the environment. At the election, he had a majority of just over 1,500. More than just an impressive building, the House of Commons is a formidable institution. A sense of history and tradition permeates every oak-panelled, leather-upholstered corner of the place. The ghosts of the parliamentary greats, Gladstone, Disraeli, Lloyd George, Churchill, haunt the chamber.
The House is like a human being. It has moods. It can change quickly. You wonder what on earth's gone wrong. Because all of a sudden there's nastiness in the air. Or good humour breaks out. That House is remarkable because no two parliaments are ever the same. Parliament's been there a long time, and I don't care who the individual is, if he comes there thinking he's going to change it, he's only walking in the steps of 10,000 who've gone before him thinking they're going to change it. That House has a mysterious power. It's able to change strong characters. I've seen people who start by rebelling against all the traditions, outmoded, it's time we swept it away. They become like I am, devoted to it.
Broadwater Farm Estate. It was here 3 years ago that PC Keith Blakelock was hacked to death. And it was for his comments after those riots that the MP for Tottenham is probably best remembered. Grant remarked that the police had got a bloody good hiding. He was, though, he says, expressing not his view, but merely repeating that of the rioters. But blood, like mud, sticks. Most of Grant's constituents are from ethnic minorities, Cypriot, Irish, Asian, but principally Afro-Caribbean. Three quarters of the cases that Grant handles involve immigration problems. How important an event was it for you to be elected MP?
Well, I don't think it's a big deal for me, but I think for the community it's quite important. I think that as a a black person as a part of people who are disadvantaged. It's of tremendous importance for black people as a whole to have someone in Parliament where they can represent the views of that community. But I think that for myself, it's not that fantastic.
Really not?
I don't think so, because I think that the when you are in Parliament, the atmosphere there is not all that it's made out to be. I think that I think it's overrated, the place. I think that the people there are quite strange. I think that the customs are quite strange, and the place itself, I don't think, is a place that lends itself to harmony and to you know, equality and so on. So I think that as a person, I would be naturally against what Parliament stands for in that sense.
It's a wonderful place. It's fuller come up to my expectations, even more so, I think, than I had thought originally. There's so many facets to it. There's so many different things going on. And it is a truly democratic place. In everything that happens, it is democracy at work. Well, after all, it's been going since 1265, with one or two breaks, of course, in between. It's been developing all the time. And I think it's a wonderful institution.
Can you remember what your feelings were on the first day when you walked into the House of Commons?
Oh, tremendous excitement. Tremendous excitement. And the feeling of being completely and utterly lost. Nobody tells you where to go or what to do. I did, in fact, ring one of the government whips the day after I was elected and introduced myself. And he said, oh, well done. Come along on Monday, he said. And I said, yes, but where and what time? Oh, it doesn't matter, he said, just turn up. And I said, but what do I do? Where do I go? Oh, it doesn't matter, he said, someone will take you round. So I just turned up.
Back in the early 50s, Summerson's Walthamstow constituency was held by the Labour Prime Minister, Clem Attlee. Except for the occasional by-election upset, it remained for three decades a fairly safe Labour seat. Summerson's surprise victory for the Tories last year was, it's widely held, thanks mainly to the local Labour Council, who, just 3 months before the election, put up the rates by 62%. It's a compact constituency, and Norman Tebbit's advice has not been lost on his younger parliamentary colleague.
When I go round on my bicycle, people stop me from time to time and have a chat about this and that and tell me about their problems and their worries, and sometimes they just say, how nice to see you, which of course always makes my day. And on other occasions, people have a grumble. It's a good thing, I think, to go around on the bicycle because I'm in full view and people know that I'm about.
Being an old boy of Harrow School may not seem an essential qualification for understanding the hearts and minds of the people of Walthamstow. It did, however, come in quite handy when the newly elected Summerson turned up for his first day at the Commons.
It did, I must say, remind me very much of public school when I first arrived there. Just about the first thing that ever happened was that I was given the key to my locker, which was certainly a very convenient thing to have, but I think I would have been preferred to be shown the gents first. I remember one instance where I was completely lost, standing in a great echoing lobby somewhere, doors leading off in all directions, and I heard a measured tread behind me, and the voice said, good afternoon, sir. New member, are we? And it was one of the House of Commons policemen, and I said, yes. And he said, not knowing where to go or what to do? And I said, yes. And he said, well, sir, if I were you, I would go through that door there and up the stairs and along the passage, and you will find Committee Room 14, which is where you are supposed to be in 2 minutes' time.
The former Speaker of the House, George Thomas, now Viscount Tonopandy, and now Chairman of the National Children's Home, spent 38 unbroken years in the Commons.
But why is it that there is no induction course or even just a little guidebook?
Well, I suppose it's because they expect us. We ever have learned our way around there. I mean, other members did before us. Especially in the age of the terrorists, I don't think guidebooks would be very useful. You could be sure that the wrong ones would get hold of it.
When you arrive there, if you're lucky, a friendly MP might take you under his or her wing and show you around a bit. But I think that one of the problems that I've got, you know, with Parliament is that you are expected to serve your time, so to speak. You're expected to serve your apprenticeship. so that you are expected to find out what, you know, how things work. And, you know, it can be very frustrating and you can spend a lot of time learning. I think that there should be a proper induction course for members of parliament, which could last a week or 2 weeks, where you'd have proper instructors and you would be able to be given a guided tour of the place.
I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds as though tourists being shown around the house get more help than new MPs.
Yes, I think they probably do. In fact, it's a great help for new MPs to tack themselves onto a bunch of tourists and get taken round by one of the guides. You learn a lot more doing it like that. I do think that when a new member arrives, he could perhaps be given a bundle of papers, a plan of the place to start with.
How do you decide which debates to go to?
Well, you decide on whether they are on subjects which are of particular interest to you, to which you think you can make a good contribution. There are members there, it appears to me, who get up in debates and waffle. My goodness, they just waffle and waffle and waffle. Terrible stuff. And they just go on for hours and hours. And there are other members who want to speak as well. And very often you find you're cut out. For instance, in a second reading debate, you can put your name into the speaker and say you would like to make a speech. And that means you have to sit there from 3:30 or 4:00 onwards, which is the time the debate begins. And as a new backbencher, you won't be called till towards the end of the debate, and that means probably 9 or even 9:15. And sometimes you can sit there all that time and you're not called at all.
Over the constituency border, a year in Parliament has persuaded Bernie Grant that he can do more for the people of Tottenham, actually in Tottenham.
Now, you're on the record as saying that you're seriously considering withdrawing from the daily business of Parliament to concentrate on constituency business and black community affairs. Mm. Are you saying that you simply won't go into the place or that you won't stand again as an MP?
Oh, no. I think I was saying that I wouldn't go into the place. I was seriously considering not turning up, you know, on a daily basis. Yeah. But I certainly would stand again as a member of Parliament.
It is here in his constituency that Grant thinks his time and efforts are better spent. Among the underprivileged minorities, he includes the unemployed and the old.
That's right. We pay European community prices, but you don't get the same pensions as the European community. So it's definitely not fair. So we're going to have to do something about it. And we're going to have to try and demonstrate. That's right. One of the lowest paid in Europe. And are there any other particular things that you've got a problem with?
I think you should increase the Christmas money.
Christmas bonus.
£10. What can you do with £10?
Right.
Not well. Don't buy a pair of shoes, does it?
No,
don't buy a pair of shoes.
No. Couldn't even buy a turkey.
That's right.
But if in future Grant is going to spend more time in Tottenham than Westminster, does he still support the parliamentary system?
Oh yes, I support the parliamentary system. I've always supported the parliamentary system, I think. The only difficulty I had was that the wrong people were in Parliament. But as far as the system is concerned, I certainly would support it.
Part of that system is what Anaren Bevan called the semi-ecclesiastical ritual of the place, the pomp and the protocol that is always in evidence, from the daily prayers to the annual state opening of Parliament.
Protocol that survives has a purpose, or it would not survive. It would have been swept away long ago if it didn't have a purpose. For instance, the bowing to Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker has got a very special place there. He's out of the battle, but he's got to be buttressed to support his authority in all sorts of ways, and one way is this bowing to the chair.
But some of it is rather silly, isn't it? I mean, like in your own case as Speaker, that you have to be seeming to be unwilling to go to the chair. You actually have to be dragged to it.
Yeah, well, it is a reminder to the House that he's not taking over a cushy job. He's not having a sinecure. It's a reminder to the House he's giving up a great deal. He never again in his lifetime will make a party political speech. That's a big price for any party politician to have to pay.
Socialist Bernie Grant questions the worth of much of the ceremonial. At last year's state opening, he successfully upstaged it by appearing in his own native dashiki. And on a couple of occasions since, his maverick conduct has got him into hot water.
Do you think you personally are a bit of an embarrassment to the Labour Party?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I think that...
You've been ticked off a couple of times, haven't you, by the Speaker, for not wearing a jacket, for scribbling in prayers, that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's nothing compared to Parliament. I mean, we're talking in Parliament about people who grab the mace and throw it around and fight and so on. I mean, I haven't arrived at that stage yet. I mean, I think that I think that I'm quite well behaved. I mean, I went, you know, when I wore my dashiki in Parliament, I wore it as a gesture to let people around the world know that I'm a black African MP who's going to look after the interests of black people throughout the world, and that's the purpose of that.
Do you think the protocol does have a place, or is it just an establishment device to tame the Bolsheviks?
No, I think that it has a place, quite clearly. I mean, some of the traditions and the customs and procedures are very good, because it allows the place to tick over. But there are just some others that I think are a bit archaic and should be thrown out. But
there's a lot of silliness, really, isn't there?
Yes, I would agree with you. There's a tremendous amount of silliness. I mean, if you want to raise a point of order during a division, you know, you have to put on a top hat and sit down. Now, I mean, I really can't see how... I really don't see why we need to do that in 1988.
Well, of course, it sounds bizarre, but, again, there must be a reason for it, and I would imagine... The reason for it is that if in a normal course you want to raise a point of order, the way you do that is by getting to your feet. And since everyone else is sitting at the time, anyone on his feet is immediately conspicuous. However, during a division, of course, there's lots of members on their feet, and there's lots of hubbub and talking and people moving about. And so someone else just standing up is going to be inconspicuous. And the speaker's got to know, amid all the roar of voices, that someone wishes to raise a point of order. And someone's sitting there with a black top hat on his head. It does look a bit incongruous, but he's instantly recognisable. And I'm quite sure that's the reason why. The first time I went into prayers, there's a particular point in prayers where everyone turns round and faces away from each other. And that, of course, took me completely by surprise, but I turned round with everyone else. And now, of course, it's second nature. And after the next general election, that is the new intake, we'll all feel similar bewilderment, but they'll do what everyone else does, and then it'll become the natural thing to do for them too.
But do you know why you turn around?
I have no idea why we turn around. There will be a reason for it. It seems to me that there's always reasons for all these little things in the House of Commons, and I would imagine it is to stop members on either side of the House glaring or scowling at each other or mouthing insults at each other during prayers. If you turn away from each other, obviously you can't do that, and you can concentrate on the prayers, which is, of course, the right thing to do.
Members of the West Indian Ex-Servicemen's Association arrive for a meeting in Clapham. Tonight's subject is black people in British politics. Guest speaker, Bernie Grant, MP.
To recommend you to listen to the Right Honourable Bernie Grant, who became one of the first post-war Caribbean nationals or descendants of Caribbean nationals to become an MP, which is a member of parliament. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Ivan, and can I thank you for inviting me here this evening?
Technically, Grant is out of his constituency. He's south of the river. Last week, he was in Dublin representing his Irish constituents. Increasingly, Grant is in demand as both a national and international figure. His speech tonight ranges from the Caribbean to South Africa to the United States.
Because I think that over the past few months, we've seen a remarkable transformation in the political situation in America. We've seen a situation where our brother Jesse Jackson has moved from a position of some ridicule to a position where he's one of the most powerful politicians in the United States, and particularly within the Democratic Party. And
that is America may be changing, but British society, Grant believes, is still essentially racist. And nowhere is this more evident, he says, than in the House of Commons itself.
That's what I expected. I mean, that's one thing I expected to come across, because I know that regardless of the position one attains as a black person, you are always likely to come up against racism, because that's the way of the of society, because we are in a society that's institutionally racist, and it's a society that doesn't value certain people because of stereotyping in the media and in other areas. And I think that I expected to come up against racial prejudice, and I was right. For instance, all the people are trained to recognize members of parliament, and I doubt whether there is, out of the 650 MPs, whether there's another one that looks like me. And when an officer, tries to act as though they don't recognize you, or they, you say who you are and they still ignore you or push you about, then I think that it shows that there is a quite clear racism.
Does it hurt you, that sort of thing?
Of course, because racism totally disorientates someone, and no matter how tough a hide you've got, you always get upset, and because it's a very unnatural feeling, the feeling to be discriminated against, and when one is discriminated against, it just totally upsets you, and then maybe half hour later you might regain your composure, but for that particular period, because of the whole irrationality of it and the whole emotion, you are very upset, and I certainly get tremendously upset.
You never get used to it.
Oh, no, you never get used to, to racism.
It's Sunday morning at Walthamstow Reservoir, and a rare chance for the local MP to unwind. Such has been the pressure of work that this is only the second time in a year that Hugo Summerson has cast a fly. Even today, though, he has an appointment. And like most of the matters requiring his attention, it's about housing. In this case, the problem is a big one. All 21 stories of it.
I'm here to talk to some of the residents of the White Beam Tower. They're very unhappy with their living conditions. I'm here to learn more about it.
The meeting is to be held in the flat of Mrs. Wendy Small. But since the council has refused to resettle her, what does she think her MP can do?
Well, if he's the one that, runs the borough, I thought, he'd run the council as well. So he should be able to tell them to move.
What, you think your MP runs the borough and the council?
Well, from what I know, from what I heard, as I should say.
I live at 23 Whitebeam, second floor. I've got two kids. I live in a one-bedroom flat. Our largest room is smaller than what this room is. Mm. Okay? The council tells me I've got 23 points. Now, is that because I live at 23 Whitebeam Town? That's pathetic. Yeah. It's not hopeless, it's pathetic.
The problem is, it always comes back to this point system, which is wrong, because, of course, until recently, there was a waiting list here. And then people knew that they were going to be rehoused, even if it took 5 or 6 years, as long as people knew that at the end of that time.
They keep telling us they're going to do this, they're going to do that. For years now they've been doing this, and nothing's been done. We've been to meetings, one after the other, and it's the same thing all over and over again. Mm. We've got the place pulled down.
Well, do you all want the place pulled down?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'll move this all out and put...
Put the homeless in here.
Yeah, this block was meant for single people and pet couples without children. And most of the people in here now have got at least two children in 1 and 2 bedroom flats.
Yeah. Is that a letter?
Yeah, we did get that.
Can I just have a look at it? You've done better than I have. They haven't sent me one of these.
The truth is that as a Tory MP in an area with a Labour-controlled council, Summerson has no actual power, only influence, and that limited. In this sort of situation, his role is, at best, that of a community liaison officer.
It certainly is. I mean, a social services officer and an expert on many, many things, from cats scratching up seedlings to neighbours making a noise at 2 o'clock in the morning. There's no training in this job, of course, or anything like that. You just come in and people present you with these problems and you have to use your common sense to work them out.
What is the reality of power of a new MP?
Well, I would say that a newly elected MP doesn't really have power so much as influence. And if I tried to throw my weight about here as the MP, then my local council will probably say, right, we're not going to cooperate with this chap. So that's not what I try and do, because it wouldn't be in my constituents' best interest if the council decided they weren't going to cooperate with me.
Do you feel, though, that you have a lot in common with your constituents here?
I feel that as their MP, I can represent their interests, not only in the House of Commons, but also when they have problems and they come to me with those problems. I feel that I really can help them to get those sorted out, yes.
But I don't imagine that you personally have experienced many of the hardships that they probably have.
No, I probably haven't, but that doesn't mean that I can't understand what they're talking about. Well, of course I can. I mean, anyone who comes to me and says that they're living in a small one-bedroom flat with three screaming children, I mean, I can visualise perfectly well what sort of problem they have, and I know perfectly well what they want doing about it. They want to move to a bigger house. And if people want me to go and see them, if possible, I will go and see them so that I can see for myself exactly what they're talking about.
How does the power that you have now as MP for Tottenham compare with the power that you had when you were leader of Haringey Council?
Well, I think that they're two very different situations. As you say, as leader of the council, you had an amount of influence. I don't know about power. You had an amount of influence to let things happen, and you were able to, you know, to take some decisions that affected people on a daily basis. As an opposition backbench member of parliament, you clearly are not in that same situation, and you know, the influence isn't there.
What difference have those two little letters after your name made?
Well, I think that as a, if I can give you a straightforward example, when I was leader of the council, if I walked into a pub in Tottenham, you know, I would have an argument with people. People would argue with me. A friendly argument, but people would have an argument. If I were to walk into a pub in Tottenham today, people would look at me with a bit of awe and say, oh, you're the person we see on television. They wouldn't argue with me so much. They tend more to listen to what I've got to say, I think.
Because you're an MP?
Because I'm an MP, yes.
Have you been tamed by Parliament, do you think?
Tamed? Well, if I answer that question, I'd be conceding that I was wild before I went into Parliament, and I don't accept that. I mean, I think that I'm just the same now as I was before, and I think that the only difference is that the press and the media have portrayed me differently, but I don't think that I've changed at all. I mean, I've always been like this.
What are you most proud of achieving in the House?
I would say raising the subject of the hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica. I take a great interest in environmental matters, and that is a matter which worries me very much indeed. I think it could have the most terrible effect on the entire Earth.
I think that I'm most proud of perhaps stopping the Chancellor's speech in the budget. I mean, I was one of those MPs who heckled him to such an extent that he had to stop at the point when I thought the most disgraceful policy that came out of the budget was the fact that those people in the super tax bracket had their tax allowances, their tax cut down to 40%. I thought that was bad. So I'm very proud about that.
If a snap election were called 6 weeks from now, would you stand again?
I certainly would, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I hope to be the member for Walthamstow for my entire parliamentary career.
So if a snap election were called 6 weeks from now, you would stand again?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I would stand again.
And get in?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think I'd...
This week has been the death of a friend and teammate of mine. David Crudup died early Monday morning of a heart attack caused by an overdose of cocaine. David was the captain of the Atlanta Falcons special teams, and at 5 foot 8 inches and 13 stone, he was the